Coming up on Chasing the Natty, the 2025 season has officially kicked off, and outside of one game left to go, we've gotten a taste of pretty much every team and what their offenses are going to look like this season. There's a lot to react to, so we'll be diving into what you should be taking away from the Week 1 action through a fantasy lens. We'll first discuss a couple of players that people are freaking out about. We'll also be taking a look at some waiver wire players to avoid, and then we'll get to what you guys really want to hear, and that is who you should be adding to your college fantasy rosters in order to make your teams better going forward. All of that and more coming right after this.
Picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching for the end zone. Touchdown! What a start!
Give it to Reed, and there he goes! Nobody's gonna catch him! Touchdown!
It's caught! Jeremiah Smith! Touchdown, Ohio State! The legend grows!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast.
All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful Labor Day weekend here. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. You can also find us live every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. sharp to discuss the upcoming week and your start sick questions. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com and subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We got content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether that's CFF, Devi, Campus of Canton Leagues, College IDP, College DFS, Underdog Best Balls. If you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support the show even further, make sure when you sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers, you use the promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do that, you can show us some love just by leaving a like, a comment, and subscribe on the YouTube side of things, and on the podcast side of things, leave a 5-star review, make sure you're following the show. Not only does that show us support, but also the entire game of college fantasy football in general, a ton of support. If you have any further questions or just want to talk for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. Y'all, it is so good to actually be talking about like real fantasy results. I love the offseason. The speculation is so fun, but it definitely gets to a point where you feel like you've hit on every team. You kind of feel like you've, you know, dove into it as much as you possibly can, and you're just ready to see real, tangible results for you to start reacting to, because that's a huge part of college fantasy, right? We do a ton of research during the offseason. We try to understand these teams as best as possible, but with a lot of these teams, there's just one, nothing to go on half the time, so we have to speculate a ton. Two, things are always going to change, like in season, right? Injuries happen, guys work their way up the depth chart in season, in season practices and stuff like that. And so the name of the game is adapting. And so now that we have the actual results, we're able to react a little bit more. And as always with week one, there's a ton of players that either we didn't have our eyes on hardly at all, or, you know, we knew that there was a competition in certain areas, but we didn't really know who was going to come out on top there. Well, now we got it. We saw I believe to this point, outside of TCU and North Carolina, who will be playing tonight, there are, I believe we've seen every single team at least once. Stanford we saw in week zero. Granted, there's not really much to be excited about there. But yeah, it is pretty crazy. Like I said, we got a lot to discuss here today. Like I said in the intro, there are basically four segments we're going to run through here today, one being larger than the others, but first and foremost, we'll be discussing the freakout scale. For those that don't know, that is me, Chris K, and Nate Marquise rating on a scale of 1 to 10 how much we are freaking out about certain players that underperformed this past week. There's a lot of players that underperformed this past week, and I had the NIL tier Discord over in our Campus Canton Discord. I had them help me out and narrow it down to four guys that we will be discussing today. We'll also be discussing five waiver wire traps. These are guys that scored a lot of points this past weekend, but, you know, you're looking at them and you're saying, okay, this is not repeatable. This is not something you should really expect down the line. Like, you shouldn't add these guys to your waiver wire at all. For some of you that have been, you know, watching for a long time, you know what I look for. You already know yourself who not to grab. That's totally fine. It's definitely more of a segment to help people who are just getting into the game and making sure you're not just, you know, ranking by, you know, most points scored this past week and then, you know, putting in waivers for those guys. Then we'll get to the part that you guys really want to get to, the waiver players to add. We got a lot of players to talk about today. And then finally, for those of you that have DSCs in your league, I will go over five different ones that you could pick up this week that you could stream for the week. All right. With that being said, I say we get right on into this. And yeah, let's get, I just clicked the wrong button there. All right, there we go, and already technical difficulties, y'all. To say that I am not in mid-season form is quite the understatement, I would say. There we go. All right. So again, we'll start with the freakout scale here. Like I mentioned, this is me myself. Once again, not in mid-season form at all. This is myself, Nate Marquise, and Chris K. This is a scale from 1 to 10, 1 being start with confidence, don't worry about it at all. 3 is like a monitor closely kind of thing, like make sure you're checking the weekly box scores, make sure you go dive into, you know, C2C Winning Edge or PFF or whatever you need to do to kind of check out the stats of the team, making sure that, you know, guys aren't losing snaps week to week. 5, look for a backup plan. This is basically saying, like, if you, like, we'll take the first guy here, like Mekhi Hughes, right? We'll discuss him here in a second. If we have him rated as a 5, which I personally do this week, I would be prioritizing running back off the waiver wire this week. Granted, you could prioritize any position right now, and you're likely going to get somebody pretty good. But when you get to 5, I'm like, okay, make sure you get at least one good running back off the waiver wire this week in case this continues to go haywire. 8 is like, bench him now. No reason why you should be plugging him into your lineup. And then 10 is a straight drop that fool. He shouldn't even be on your roster at this point. No reason to go there. We got pretty close last week. I'd say if we did this segment last week, I would say a good chunk of us would have been saying that about Chase Sewell for Iowa State. So it's not something that, you know, just because a guy was drafted high, we're more hesitant to say to drop him. Again, it's college fantasy. We get things wrong all the time. And, you know, you got to be willing to move on pretty quickly. So let's start with our first two here. We got Mekhi Hughes, running back out of Oregon, and Caden Lee, wide receiver out of Ole Miss. Mekhi Hughes, I've got rated as a 5. Nate's got him rated as a 4. Chris K, we've got him rated as a 3. This was definitely a shocker this past week. I mean, Oregon played, what was it, Morgan State? I can't remember off the top of my head. It started with an M and it ended with a state. But effectively, Hughes was MIA for a good majority of the game, which was kind of shocking because, again, we were very much expecting Hughes to be the starting running back for Oregon. Now, I had said before that I always kind of hesitate a little bit on these G5 to Power 4 transfers, but this really did seem like a match made in heaven. Oregon needed some running back help, and Hughes really seemed like a guy that could be plugged in as their number one guy, maybe not live up to the same expectations, you know, a Jordan James or a Bucky Irving has over the last couple of years. But what I didn't expect is to not see him until like the fourth quarter of this game. I tried to do some research, try to figure out what the heck was going on here. And I hate to tell you guys, there's just not any real good answers as to what happened here. That leaves open the possibility that Hughes just could be lower on the depth chart than we were led to believe, which would be extremely unfortunate, obviously. Again, I've got him rated as a 5, which is, again, look for a backup plan. I personally, like, if I had Hughes on any of my teams, which I don't think I do because I don't think I ever drafted him as high as he was going this year, but if I had him on my roster, I don't know if I would be confident starting him at all next week. I would definitely, I have it as a 5. I could see myself raising this to a 6-7. This is very concerning, especially with no like announced suspension or anything like that. Maybe they were just saving him, saying like, okay, maybe, you know, there's no reason for you to really get reps against a Morgan State again or whoever they're playing this past week. Again, I'd love to have an answer for you guys, but that the reality of the situation is we just got nothing out of Eugene right now with regards to Mekhi Hughes. So I'm definitely concerned. This is definitely something that kind of blindsided us all. Definitely, definitely something to monitor. Caden Lee is the other guy on this particular graphic. We got two more after this, and we're all in kind of agreement. This is a monitor closely kind of situation. Myself and Nate are at a 3. Chris K is a little bit higher at a 4. But it's Ole Miss blowing up against a inferior opponent. They do this every single year. And it just happened to be that Caden Lee wasn't getting a ton of targets, right? We saw last year that Lee is a very important piece to this passing offense. I don't think that has changed from year to year here. This just feels like a variant situation, right? You take a look at the snap counts. Caden Lee was in the top 3. He was a starting wide receiver for Ole Miss. It just happened to be that maybe, again, Oregon State was keying in on him. I don't know. Harrison Wallace had the really good day. We'll talk about him later when we talk about some, you know, honorable mentions at wide receiver. But as far as I'm concerned, I would say if you were planning on starting Caden Lee again this week, I say keep him there. If you have better options, yeah, maybe bench him. But I think he's going to be fine, is my point. And Nate and Chris are both in agreement with me on that. So. Other two guys that people wanted to discuss here were wide receiver Cam Coleman out of Auburn and then Anthony Hankerson, the running back out of Oregon State. These two are a bit more fun. Cam Coleman, all three of us are pretty much in agreement that there's some legitimate concern here, right? I think Cam Coleman had, what, one catch for 18 yards this past week against Baylor. Granted, Baylor is a bit of a tough, like, not even really a tougher opponent. Auburn put up, like, what, 31, 38 fantasy or points on them? I can't remember the score off the top of my head. But the fact that Cam Coleman was not really heavily involved in that, definitely concerning, right? Especially when they have other options at wide receiver. You were kind of hoping to see a little bit more of that funneling we saw towards the end of 2024. In those last three games they had to close out the season where Cam Coleman was getting like 10 targets a game. That just straight up wasn't happening here, right? The other thing that is of real concern is the fact that with Jackson Arnold as quarterback, this passing game does have a little bit more limitations than even what we saw last year. Again, granted, again, Baylor, not a pushover on defense by any stretch of the imagination, but Auburn seems like they are going to find most of their success in their running game. Again, Alston looked good. Cobb looked good. Obviously, Jackson Arnold himself looked really good on the ground yesterday. So maybe they don't have to use the passing game nearly as much. And so, yeah, we're all pretty high on this. I've got Cam Coleman as a 5. Look for a backup plan. There's a ton of great wide receivers on the waiver wire this week. So I would prioritize that. Nate's got it at a 6. Chris K's got it all the way up as an 8. He, like Chris K would say, just bench him now. Don't even start him next week. And honestly, I could see myself getting to that point pretty quickly. Anthony Hankerson's a fun one because it's not very often that me, Nate Marquise, and Chris K differ so much when it comes to a player's freakout scale rating, but that's exactly what we have going on here, right? Chris K's got him at a 2. I've got him at a 5. Nate Marquise, very concerned all the way up there at a 7. Again, I don't have, you know, written statements from K and Nate, but I will try to kind of explain this big swath, a big range of ratings here. We'll start with at the bottom, like what's the positive case here for Anthony Hankerson? Because Hankerson didn't have a great game this past week, right? It was like 40 something yards, touchdown, and a couple catches through the air. Not even close to really what you would want to see from a, you know, first round option in, you know, fantasy this year, right? Again, he was going up against Cal, which again, another power four opponent, nothing that, you know, not a defense you stay awake at or stay awake for at night, but you know, it is tougher than a lot of the teams that they were kind of facing last year. But the positive case here is that, again, this was just a variance thing, right? Like even the best running backs in college fantasy are going to have relative dud games, right? And even if we go back to last year, let me see if I can find Hankerson's stats from last year. Like, there are going to be some smaller games just sprinkled in everywhere, right? Against Oregon, you know, 57 yards. You got two touchdowns in that game. Well, actually, you did pretty well in that game. 57 yards on the ground, but 36 through the air. You know, against Cal last year, actually, Hankerson only had 49 yards on 16 carries. So something about Cal's defense, maybe Hankerson just isn't, you know, too well prepared for. I don't know. But, you know, that's the hope, right? And that's kind of where Chris Kay is mostly at. He's just saying, like, hey, it's one bad week. No real reason to freak out. They've got Fresno State. They've got other teams down the line that they can perform well with, especially in the second half of the season here. Be patient. He'll get back on track. Then you have, you know, I'll go to the other side here with Nate Marquis. You know, he's really freaking out. I do think there is legitimate reason to kind of be a little worried here, right? One, the offensive line does not seem to have improved much from last year, and that was a big thing that really held Hankerson back down the stretch last year, even with him as the clear number one back for the Beavers. And so we saw it against Cal this past week. The running game couldn't really get going. This is a team that is seemingly going to struggle quite a bit. The other piece of this is, boy, the schedule, not as easy as what we were looking at last year, right? To start off, we have Cal, Fresno State, Texas Tech, Oregon, Houston, App State, Wake Forest. That is a much harder schedule than what Oregon State was facing this time last year when they were mostly facing, you know, Mountain West opponents here and there. And so, and then it gets easier in the second half, right? You get Lafayette, Washington State twice, although their defense seems to be pretty stout. And then Sam Houston, whose defense is horrendous. And then you got Tulsa as well. Again, jury's out on what Tulsa's defense is going to look like. But my point is that this schedule is quite a bit harder, I would say, than last year. And so if this offensive line continues to be an issue and this running game continues to suffer because of that, Hankerson, I think, could really be in trouble. That's why I've got him as a five. I would, if you have a Hankerson share, be prioritizing running back on the waiver wire this week. So, with that being said, let's move on from the freakout scale and let's go discuss some of these waiver wire traps for this week. Again, these are guys that performed very highly in their respective games, but I am not anticipating them to be week over week successes here. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see their names up on the screen, and you will see one thing in common with all of them, and that is they face a FCS opponent of some kind from this past week, which always throws a huge loop in terms of like which players are going to be performing, because you have backups coming in, playing more than they normally will. You have guys ripping off huge plays that they aren't going to probably be able to do in conference play. There's a whole host of reasons why it's hard to take away actual takeaways. Wow, Jared, great job there. From games like this, right? But what I can tell you is I'm not trusting these five players. We'll start with the first one, Braxton Woodson, quarterback out of Navy, playing against an FCS opponent. Oddly, like, Blake Horvath got taken out really early in this game. They didn't run him a ton. Very much felt like that they were being very cautious with Horvath in this game, making sure, like, they know he's their golden goose going forward. I did some research just to make sure. It doesn't seem like it was an injury of any kind. They just took him out, got Woodson quite a bit of run in this game. So for that, I will tell people, don't be going drafting Woodson thinking you got the wrong Navy quarterback. No, Horvath, 100% still the guy. And, you know, Woodson got a ton of run, looked good. Again, if you're in a dynasty league, I would grab Woodson just as a guy that to play for the future. But for right now, I want to go that direction, obviously. Cade Wolford, running back out of Kent State. This was an interesting one because I had the notifications on yesterday for Kent State saying, you know, Wolford ripped off like two huge touchdowns in this game. And I was like, oh, wow, is this, you know, the next, you know, top wide receiver for Kent State? I'm kind of interested in that. Then I went and took a look and I'm like, oh, it was a running back that ripped off two huge catches. And he did. He ripped off those two catches on two targets, and, you know, he had, like, one carry in this game. So on three touches, basically, he ripped off a ton of yardage, and maybe that earns him more touches in the future. I don't know, but, like, I'm already hesitant about getting any Kent State running back because, again, they're going to be playing from behind so much this season, and they barely beat their FCS opponent they were playing this past weekend, like 14-12. It was not pretty, and so, yeah, Cade Wolford, avoid that with all possibilities. Then you got Jordan Davidson, very much a classic week one guy that blows up. He had three touchdowns, but he only had six carries in this game. Very much further down the depth chart for Oregon. I highly doubt we see him even really get six touches in any game going forward, let alone six touches for three touchdowns. So, yeah, Davidson, a classic waiver wire trap for week one. And then Jacquez Cross, running back out of Arkansas State, didn't get a ton of carries in this game. No running back from Arkansas State ever does. They love to split the backfields over there. And just another guy that, you know, the touchdown variance went his way for this game. And I wouldn't trust that at all moving forward. Very low volume. Just not a guy that I would be investing in. And then last but not least here, a technical wide receiver in Cade Harris out of Air Force. Very much an odd guy. He was their leading wide receiver last year, I believe. I can't remember. And again, this is where I'm not in my midseason form, so please forgive me all as I do some mid-show research. Was he their leading wide receiver last year? Yes, he was. Hey, I got that right. Not much, though. And that's the reason why I don't want to invest in him this year. He had 23 catches for 368 yards last year. Again, very efficient. All Air Force wide receivers are, because they usually rip off big plays when they do pass the ball, because, you know, defenses aren't, you know, seeing it coming. But, you know, in this past game, I think he had like three touchdowns, had like eight carries, like just something we never really seen him do before. And yeah, okay, so he has three receptions for 83 yards and a touchdown, eight carries, 66 yards rushing, and two touchdowns. I personally doubt we see him get a workload like that going forward. They're also playing Bucknell. They completely destroyed them. Air Force, we've seen the last couple of years, has struggled a little bit more in Mountain West games recently. And so that efficiency is going to come down in a big way there. I personally wouldn't want to rely on an Air Force wide receiver at all, even with him getting a couple of carries here. But even last year, he was getting some carries. Yeah. Even last year, to finish the season, he got eight carries, five carries, and in none of these games, or actually, I had that backwards. He started the season with more carries, and as the season went along, he got less and less carries. I think we see something similar here. Just at the end of the day, don't trust triple option wide receivers. You're going to get burned more often than not. So, but then again, I said that about quarterbacks for triple option teams, and then we had Blake Horvath and Bryson Daly go absolutely nuts last year, so maybe this is the year. But for right now, the process tells me don't trust triple option wide receivers. So, with that being said, let's get to the part you guys really want to talk about. Let's talk about some of these waiver wire pickups for this week. Before I get into it, I do want to kind of go over just some kind of typical trends I saw. We'll start with the quarterbacks here. I don't think it's any surprise to anybody out there with a year where we had so many known commodities at quarterback, very few like true competitions we were looking at. A lot of the game-breaking quarterbacks have already been sucked up in drafts, right? There's no real surprise to me that there are a few game-changing options on the waiver wire. However, when you have quarterbacks pop up, and you know, especially dual-threat quarterbacks, they can still be weekly winners, right? And there's a few big time ones that have emerged this weekend. So we'll take a look at those guys. At running back, there were so many rooms that we were told this offseason were going to be a split between multiple guys, and quite frankly, just turned out to be anything but, especially at the G5 level. There are quite a few surprise workhorses that we need to find some homes on rosters as soon as possible. And then there's the wide receivers. Oh my good Lord in heaven. There are so many wide receivers who are intriguing this week. And I know a lot of you were kind of hoping that in this waiver wire trap segment that I would kind of filter out some of these guys. But here's the thing, y'all, like a lot of them are really intriguing, but a lot of them have some kind of warts on them, but they aren't warty enough for me to really leave them out altogether. Again, I'll explain it better once we actually start cutting talking about it. But before this show, before I started really kind of putting it together, I had as many as 25 wide receivers written down to potentially discuss. I somehow managed to cut it down to five to deep dive into for this show. But like I said, there are so many names you could throw my way, and it wouldn't be a lie for me to say that they are worth a pickup, even if most of them, like I said, have some warts that kind of keep them from being a surefire bet. And then lastly, again, we'll get to tight ends. I got three of them here today. Some old CFF favorites have reemerged after being left for dead, either because of injury and because of failure of previous schools. again, there's a lot to be excited about this week. So, yeah, we'll get into it as we move the page here. I'll just remind everybody that every player that we are discussing today is sub 30% rostered on CFF leagues for Fantrax. This is kind of my threshold that I put out there because, you know, that means about 70% of leagues have these guys on the waiver wire. And I think that's a good enough number to where the information I'm discussing with you guys today is mostly relevant for your leagues. I understand some of you play in super deep leagues, and I have a couple of guys that are very low rostered that we will discuss today. So there's going to be some guys that will definitely be intriguing for you guys who play in super deep leagues. But for the average person in their leagues, you know, they're playing like, you know, maybe 15 to 20 roster spots deep and everything. A lot of these guys are available. Let's start with quarterbacks. Let's start with the quarterback out of Missouri, Bo Pribula. This was a competition that was going to go into the season, right? A lot of us have expected Pro Pribula to win this job, but there was a lot of talk of Sam Horn really kind of pushing him, and they were both going to get snaps. And going into week one, like I said, they were both set to get series in this week one game against Central Arkansas, and the competition ended quickly. The bad news is that it ended quickly because Sam Horn was injured on his first snap of the game. He was seen in crutches very shortly afterwards, and he looks to be done for a while. I hate that. It really does suck the joy out of the game when you see guys get injured like that. But the good news is that it also ended pretty quickly because Bo Pribula looked really good as the starting quarterback for Missouri. He completed 23 of his 28 passes for 283 yards and 2 touchdowns. As expected with Pribula, we also got to see him use his legs. He accumulated 65 yards and 2 touchdowns on 10 carries. Looked really, really good doing so. Again, yes, it was against Central Arkansas, but, you know, Pribula's passing numbers answered a lot of his questions regarding his ability to be more than a rushing threat. He was also able to show off his arm talent in different ways, including a very deep shot early on to Marquise Johnson for a touchdown. For those of you who have been playing CFF for a while, you'll remember what this offensive system did for Brady Cook just 2 years ago, allowed him to finish as a top 30 quarterback in college fantasy 2023. Pribula, with his rushing skill set, I think he looks like he should be able to potentially take on an even, take, or excuse me, let me try this again. He should be able to take even more advantage of this system, right? Like, Cook could run. He wasn't a true dual threat quarterback versus Pribula, very much more a direct threat with his legs. And I think this offensive staff is ready to use that. I think the main thing that will hold Pribula back is playing an SEC schedule. They got a lot of tough opponents on their schedule this year, including Alabama, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, a lot of defenses that absolutely could potentially shut down this offense. So definitely something to keep in mind here. And just in general, shootouts are less likely to happen in the SEC unless you're playing like, well, I would say LSU, but their defense actually looks really solid this year. Maybe Mississippi State, right? Like, a shootout potential could happen there if they play against each other. I can't remember off the top of my head. Regardless, Pribula with his legs, absolutely worth rostering. Let's move on to our second guy here, and that is Brad Jackson, the quarterback out of Texas State, rostered on 20% of rosters. And for those of you who know this system, this is GJ Kinney's system here at Texas State. You might be wondering, how in the world is a GJ Kinney quarterback still available on waivers? Well, this was another competition, even though, you know, Jackson was the favorite for a while, that went on for a really, really long time. Like, despite Jackson getting backup duties for Texas State last year, like I said, most of the offseason was far from certainty that Jackson would even win this job. He was competing against the likes of Holden Gariner, Nate Yarnell, Kedrick Luster, all guys that were like legitimate, you know, recruits out of high school in a four-way race for this job, right? It did not help that based on what we previously seen from Jackson, he didn't seem like he quite fit what we wanted to see in a Kinney starting quarterback. Very much a, like what we saw before, was a run-first guy, very limited passing. Right, like when he filled in for Jordan McLeod last year, like I said, limited in his passing opportunities, much more used as a runner. This led to a lot of doubt that Jackson, when his time came, could really run this full offense. And if one of the more traditional quarterbacks like Yarnell, like Gariner, like Luster would eventually end up winning this job, Well, I don't think there's any real doubt now, right? In his first start of the season, Jackson passed 26 times, completed 18 of them for a solid 69.2% completion percentage. That is a huge improvement from what we saw last year. I think he was just barely hovering above 50%. This totaled in 214 yards for the year, four touchdowns. Jackson was able to run some as well as expected, totaling 48 yards on 10 carries. Now that Jackson's passing ability has improved, in addition to his potential rush, his potential to rush for 100 yards any given week, absolutely, I think Jackson could end up being a weekly starter in most leagues. We've seen G.J. Kinney's quarterbacks in McLeod, T.J. Finley. These have been guys that are not only rosterable, but startable in most weeks. You're playing in the Sun Belt here. There's not a lot of tough competition here, really outside of the Arizona State game in a couple of weeks. I don't see there's any real resistance to Jackson entering your starting lineup. If you are somebody who is struggling with quarterback out of the gate, I think Jackson's a must add for you this week. Next up, we got Dwayne Coleman, quarterback out of Army, rostered on 16% of leagues. Bryson Daly, he is not, but that still should not prevent CFF players from adding Dwayne Coleman to their rosters this season. I had mentioned during the offseason that Coleman was absolutely worth a late round shot at quarterback, not only due to the upside of him performing like Daly, but you didn't even need Daly-like productions for him to be a CFF-relevant quarterback. If he was able to get, 65-70% of the production that Daly was able to get last season, very much still a viable CFF quarterback, and it looks like that's exactly what we are going to get here, right? Coleman did not play this whole game. He was taken out due to what appears to be kind of a minor injury, just kind of getting banged up. More on that in a second. But in the time he did play, though, you have to love what you saw, right? He passed 12 times, completed 7 of them for 129 yards and a touchdown, which is really, really solid for an Army quarterback any given week. And then just like any good Army quarterback, he ran the ball 24 times for 100 yards and scored another touchdown. I will say it is a little concerning that Army failed to put away Tarleton State, right? Like, they lost. They end up losing this game. So I am quite concerned that, the Black Knights are going to be struggling when they actually get to some harder competition here in the AAC. But, an early season loss might also be enough to kind of get them to set things straight. We'll see. The real question is, what kind of, bang up injury job are we dealing with here with Coleman? Why did he get taken out of this game? The hope is that the injury isn't anything serious. They took him out, out of precaution. We're hoping that this isn't something long-term or short-term. We will definitely see. Next quarterback I have up here is Mr. Jake Retzlaff, the quarterback out of Tulane, rostered on 18% of leagues. If we're being real, if we had known that Retzlaff had been the starting quarterback at Tulane the entire offseason rather than the whole journey he went through this offseason going from BYU and then coming in real late to Tulane, he'd probably be well above 30% rostered at this point, so I guess we're kind of getting lucky here in the fact we got a solid quarterback. He looked really good against Northwestern. Northwestern looked really bad. Good Lord, holy crap. I think Preston Stone threw, four interceptions in that game. Couldn't score a touchdown. Yikes. But Tulane looked really good, and a lot of it had to do with Retzlaff here. He was 18 for 31, 152 yards and a touchdown through the air. He also had 10 carries for 113 yards and a touchdown on the ground. I think he's a great fit for this Tulane offense. I think that they are going to see themselves in plenty of shootout opportunities, including this upcoming weekend against South Alabama. They got two tough opponents after that with Duke and Ole Miss on the docket. But once they get into that full AAC conference schedule, I really do think that we will see Tulane perform well. If you get a dual threat quarterback in that Tulane offense, there, I see Retzlaff being a quality add for CFF rosters this year. So, last quarterback I'm throwing out here is a guy that I don't want to talk about. One, because I think he's the least confident quarterback I'm in amongst the five here, but I do want to throw him out here, especially for deeper leagues. Other reason why I don't want to talk about him is because I really don't want to say, I want to say this name as few times as possible, but it is Nick Minicucci out of the quarterback out of Delaware. And this one, by the way, caught me by surprise. One, I really thought that this was Zach Marker's job, but apparently not. Again, the bad news because of that surprise is that I now have to say Minicucci more times than I probably want to say this entire season. But the good news is if that there was a more fantasy relevant quarterback between Nick here and Zach Marker, it was Nick, right? We'll see how Delaware fares in FBS play. I think there's a lot of questions about how they're going to translate, but if there's a way where, or if there's a place where FCS teams can kind of find their footing sooner rather than later, it is the CUSA. Mini Coochie here, a bit of a dual threat quarterback. He had 9 carries for 44 yards and a touchdown in this game. Looked good passing too, 28 for 36, 251 yards and 3 touchdowns. Again, I don't expect them to do that every single week, but we have seen FCS opponents translate pretty well, at least at the G5 level here. So the hope is that Nick is going to have himself some solid weeks down the stretch in CUSA play. But not this week. He's got Colorado, and I don't trust Delaware to do particularly well in that game. Let's take a look at some honorable mentions at quarterback. First things first, Drew Messemaker above the 30% threshold that I had, but I'm putting him here as an honorable mention because, quite frankly, he should be 100% by the end of the week. Haas Haney's another interesting one. Yes, he did, it appears, break his foot, and he will be out for at least 4 to 5 weeks. So why am I asking you to pick him up? Well, I'm asking you to pick him up, and if you have an IR spot available, I think he's worth picking up and just stashing on that IR spot. He looked great in Oklahoma State's game this past weekend. Very dynamic. The talk all offseason was that Zane Flores was going to win this job. Then all of a sudden, right before the season started, Haney was named the starter. They said that both of them were going to get reps in this game. But boy, if you watch the game, it is so clear that Haney is just a so much more dynamic option than Flores. And really, really could be an incredible CFF player down the stretch with his athleticism in that Mike Gundy offense. I say he's worth picking up and putting on your IR spot. And then AJ Swan at App State looked really good. He threw 46 times in a win. App State ran a ton of plays in this game, so I'm kind of shocked at that, and I think that makes Swan somebody interesting to add. I'll throw out Gunnar Stockton here out of Georgia, roster in 29% of leagues right now. He'll probably be higher than 30% this time next week. It does appear that Georgia is going to use Gunner's legs quite a bit more than I was anticipating, and I was saying that Gunner was worth a late round shot at the end of drafts a lot of times, but I was kind of concerned that, you know, Kirby and staff were going to let him run. Well, he ran for like 73 yards and 2 touchdowns in this game against Marshall. I think that's not going to stop going forward. And last but not least, a guy that I talked about last week in week zero's reaction show was Anthony Calandria. I'm throwing him back out here as a add at the quarterback position. I really think that he is a great fit for this Dan Mullen offense, and we saw him perform better this week than even he did last week. I think between that and UNLV's defense just being, quite frankly, atrocious, I think that he'll have a lot of shootout potential, and he's an absolute must add. So, with that being said, let's move on. Let's go talk about some of these running backs after I take a sip of water. And then I remind you all that if you're listening, and I appreciate you guys so much for doing so, that if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you hit that like button. Make sure you subscribe if you like what you're hearing. If you find this stuff helpful, it helps us out a ton. And we are oh so close to our goal of 1,000 subscribers. So if you have not hit that subscribe button already on the YouTube side of things, please go ahead and do so to help us out immensely. And I would be so, so happy if we hit that goal sooner rather than later. All right. With that out of the way, let's go ahead and start talking about these running backs. And we'll start with Miles Montgomery, running back. Out of UCF, rostered on 16% of rosters right now. I've been a Miles Montgomery believer since his days at Cincinnati. It sucked having to watch him be stuck behind RJ Harvey at UCF, but now his time has come, and those who have believed for a long time are being rewarded. There was concern that Scott Frost, who rarely uses a workhorse in his offense, was bringing in the likes of, you know, Jaden Nixon out of Western Michigan to run another split backfield here. You know, he didn't have any kind of real loyalty to Miles Montgomery since, you know, Miles Montgomery didn't play with him at Nebraska, and, you know, Scott Frost being brought in, and, you know, Montgomery was a piece of the previous regime. But those fears seem to be completely absolved by what we saw on Friday night, as Montgomery got 56.8% of the carries, and his main competition was the dual threat quarterbacks he was playing with, not another running back. In fact, the next closest among the running backs in carries was Jaden Nixon with a whopping 2. Ross has made it pretty clear based on what we saw this past weekend. Montgomery is a tier above the rest of this room, and they are going to rely on him heavily this offseason, right? Now, obviously, it wasn't great watching UCF struggle to put away a very depleted Jacksonville State team. It certainly makes me concerned that Montgomery's scoring opportunities are going to remain low. Like, he didn't score a touchdown in this game. But I do think Montgomery was one of the few things that was working on this offense, which only, in my opinion, will continue to make this staff rely on him when they do need to score, right? He's by far the most productive member on this squad. Like I said, 21 carries, 79 yards, 3 catches for 71 yards. And in this game, we saw them start Cam Fancher, but Fancher looked horrible, and they replaced him with Taven Jackson halfway through. And Jackson looks like he'll be the starting quarterback moving forward. He just looked way better than Fancher down the stretch. Again, the stat differences between the two was just monstrous, even though they played roughly the same amount. The hope is, though, with Jackson being the starting quarterback now, this makes the passing game a lot more viable. And that's going to help Montgomery in a couple of ways. One, it'll lead to some sweet PPR points for Miles Montgomery. And we saw this past weekend that, you know, they're willing to use Montgomery out of the backfield. 3 catches, 71 yards. He can rip a big one out of the backfield. And then secondly, it should help lighten that box as defenses don't feel like they can just kind of key in on the run like Jacksonville State did to start the game this past week. If those two things happen, Montgomery's got a really bright future in CFF ahead, especially playing against a high-scoring conference like the Big 12. I like Montgomery a lot going forward. The next guy up here, we're going to stick with the gold and black teams here, and we're going to talk about Rashad Dubinion, running back out of App State, rostered on 11% of leagues. With Dowell Loganes taking over as the head coach of App State, there was no doubt that he was going to want his offense that he ran at South Carolina to translate here in Boone. That sounds pretty easy, but you know, to try to project. But then in his last 2 years at South Carolina, Loganes employed a split backfield in 2023 with Mario Anderson, DeCorian Joyner, and others. And then you had a workhorse in 2024 with Raheem Sanders. So it wasn't entirely clear what we were supposed to expect here at App State. The word for most of the offseason is that we would see a committee approach headlined by a split between Rashad Dubinion and program veteran Kanye Roberts. Unfortunately, right before the season, Roberts sustained a season-ending injury. And, you know, it was a question of what would happen to Roberts' carries, right? Would that just lead to more of a committee as his, what was his would be split up among some of the other backs behind Dubinion? Or would it be a scenario where Dubinion would absolve a lot of those carries? And that was a reality I was kind of asking myself as we got closer to the season. I started drafting Dubinion just a little bit more because I'm like, there's a possibility here, especially with Dubinion having worked with Loganes in the past during both of their times at Arkansas, that he could be a guy that Loganes really trusts. And that seems like that's exactly what has happened. And Dubinion is now a true workhorse back for the Mountaineers, right? He finished his game with 22 carries, 111 yards, and a touchdown. He also saw 6 targets, which resulted in 5 catches, 31 yards. That's going to come in real handy for PPR leagues. Like I said, there's a previous relationship between both of these guys. I think that should solidify his position on this team and make him an excellent weekly play, especially as the Mountaineers get into Sun Belt play. So, moving on, let's talk about another G5 back that kind of exploded here late during the offseason. For much of the offseason, there was a lot of doubt whether or not we would see Sean Lewis. By the way, I should say the name of the player. We're going to talk about Lucky Sutton, running back out of San Diego State. For much of the offseason, there was a lot of doubt that we would see Sean Lewis make another workhorse back who didn't carry the name Marquez Cooper, right? After all, that is literally the only player that Lewis had allowed to tote the rock as many times as he did. However, as we got closer to the season, whispers of a lucky number 7 began to surface in practice, and they were quite literally referring to Lucky Sutton, who wears number 7, right? And a good luck charm he may end up being, right? Sutton put up a really nice stat line here of 100 yards and 2 touchdowns on 22 carries against Stony Brook. Well, not a great line in terms of efficient touches, especially against an FCS opponent. We don't need him to be efficient to be relevant, right? This is a pure volume play. In 2024, Cooper finishes the RB16 in CFF. theoretically, Sutton should be playing with a better quarterback than what Cooper had last season, so that should be both good and bad for his upside, similar to Miles Montgomery, where it'll lighten the box against him, but also maybe it doesn't let him monopolize the scoring opportunities like Cooper had last year. Regardless, a workhorse back in the Mountain West is more than welcome in CFF. I think that Lucky Sutton's absolutely worth a pickup here, and the schedule is pretty great once they get past the Washington State matchup and Cal matchup this week. Again, I don't really know what to think of Washington State's defense. That might end up being a solid one. Cal was able to shut down Anthony Hankerson. I don't trust the fact that they're going to be able to shut... I do trust the fact they'll be able to shut down Lucky Sutton. I don't know if I trust Lucky Sutton in that matchup, but after that, should be pretty smooth sailing for Sutton and the Aztecs. Moving on here, let's discuss Mr. Javon Jackson, the running back out of UAB. This past week, Jackson had himself 17 attempts for 166 yards and two touchdowns. No work through the air in a game where, boy, UAB had to score against Alabama State. And I believe the final score was like 52 to 42. Tons of points all over the place, and Jackson was a huge part of that, scoring two touchdowns. Backup running back Solomon Beebe scored two touchdowns as well. People seem to like him quite a bit. I definitely like him as a dynasty play, as this is Jackson's final year, and Beebe, the younger brother of Lee Beebe, very much could end up being the workhorse back for UAB moving forward. And this very much is a system play. We have seen Trent Dilfer since his time getting to UAB. He loves to have himself a top-end back, especially a high-end efficient back as his number one guy. Just look at Lee Beebe last year. Just look at Jermaine Brown the year before. What kind of does surprise me is that Jackson, despite his, you know, pass-catching ability at his previous stops, they didn't really target him a ton in this game. So I bet that that's something that we haven't really seen them do quite yet, and that could be something we see more of down the line, and that just adds to the potential ceiling of Jackson moving forward. Again, the UAB defense looks horrendous, and so that basically requires that UAB is going to need to score a ton of points week in and week out. That provides a ton of scoring opportunities for Jackson here. I like Javon Jackson. I thought he, before the season started, he was a decent fit for this system, and that, you know, if he did earn that RB1 title, that there was some CFF upside here. So far, so good with it again. Almost 10 yards a carry against an FCS opponent. Obviously, not sustainable once they start getting into AAC play here. Or, excuse me, the American Conference. So it should just be American play as we, you know, as the weeks go on here. But I like Jackson as a waiver wire pickup for this week as well. Last guy that we're going to dive into in depth here is Dominic Richardson, the running back out of Tulsa, rostered on 4% of leagues. This past week, 20 rushing attempts, 142 yards, and a touchdown. He also had two targets, one reception for 6 yards, a little bit of pass work, nothing too crazy. This one kind of caught me by surprise. Again, not that we had a ton of information coming out of Tulsa, but really when you looked at the system history, like, neither head coach Trey Lamb, who comes from East Tennessee State, nor offensive coordinator Brad Robbins, who comes from UConn, neither of them come from systems where, you know, a workhorse was typically used. So, given the fact that they had Richardson, they had A.J. Allen, they had a couple other guys I was interested in, this felt like it was going to be a committee situation for me. Plus, I didn't know if I was really going to trust Tulsa's offense. But it appears, based on what we saw this past week, they are more than happy to run Dominic Richardson a ton, even in a, you know, matchup here where they didn't have to. Like, they could have split it up a little bit more, save Richardson for later. They still gave him 20 touches. Seems like he'll be a real natural fit here. Richardson is from Oklahoma. Again, he started at Oklahoma State. He's from the area. He's back home. Seems like the staff thinks pretty clearly that he is the best of the bunch of RBs that they had transfer in. He's a six-year guy, tons of experience under his belt. I think that this is going to be one of those guys where, even if the system didn't really call for it, even if we don't really trust that, you know, we don't know what to think of this offense as a whole yet, Richardson's going to be a big part of it week in and week out, and very much just a volume play going forward from here. So, we shall see. A couple of honorable mentions at running back. I'll try to go through here real quick. Sam Scott, running back out of Wyoming, rostered on 5% of leagues. He had 29 carries this past week. This was another team that it was said we're going to be splitting the workload between Sam Scott and Teron Kelman. That was not the case at all. Sam Scott got all the carries in this game. Hopefully that is the case moving forward. It's good to see another workhorse back among the Wyoming players. And so I think Sam Scott's worth picking up. Tay Meadows is an interesting one, running back out of Troy. Again, there's a lot of talk about, you know, who could be the potential workhorse back for Troy this year. Obviously, after Damian Taylor left, they brought in Trey Cooley. He is now out for the year with an injury, which sucks. And then there's a lot of talk about Jordan Lovett. But out of nowhere, here comes Tay Meadows. I guess I was right on, you know, to the people who were liking Jordan Lovett. I said, I don't think Jordan Lovett's very good. It turns out I was correct on that, because Tay Meadows comes in here with 23 attempts, 186 yards, and a touchdown against Nichols this past weekend. I don't know if that's going to translate once they get more into Sun Belt play, but regardless, you got a workhorse back. Absolutely worth picking up. Quentin Jackson, running back out of Rice, a guy that I was semi-interested in after Taji Atkins left right before the season. Well, seems like the staff's pretty interested in him as well. 22 attempts, 119 yards, and a touchdown. Not a very high scoring offense. I think this game ended 14-12 for both sides between them and Louisiana. So I'm concerned about their ability to score going forward. But regardless, again, it is a workhorse back. Absolutely worth picking up here. Jalen Dupree, running back of Colorado State, has shocked a lot of us. There was a bit of a steady drumbeat here. I just wasn't sure that we were going to really see him take over as a workhorse back over the likes of Justin Marshall, but that's exactly what he did this past weekend for Colorado State. Maybe not workhorse, because I don't think he broke 20 carries, but very much the lead back for Colorado State. And given what we saw Colorado State do last year, and the fact that this passing game still definitely needs a little bit of work for Colorado State this year, I think they'll continue to rely on him. And in Mountain West games, we should see plenty from Dupree moving forward. And then the last guy I'll throw out here, I'm putting a big asterisk next to this one, but Braylon McReynolds kind of worth taking a look at for you on Monroe. This is Bryant Vincent's offense. Once again, the depth chart completely lied to us. Deshaun Ford nor Tyrell Henry got carries until the fourth quarter of this game. Braylon McReynolds got the most carries at 11 for 113 yards. Very much a huge committee approach in this game. I think it was very much them just trying to figure out, all right, who, once we actually put out there, is going to produce for us. McReynolds, a veteran from South Alabama, looks to be the lead guy right now. Does that translate into him getting an Ahmad Hardy-style workload moving forward? I do not know, but if you're going to take a shot on the guy, McReynolds is probably the best bet right now. And last but not least, another guy similar to Drew Mestemaker, Kewon Lacy, running back out of Ole Miss, rostered on 36% of leagues, so lower than the 30% threshold that I normally have here. He should be 100% by week's end. I was shocked, honestly, by how much more workload he got than the rest of that Ole Miss running back room. I love it because I liked his talent a lot, but based on like what I was hearing, it seemed like that, you know, there wasn't going to be a Quinshon Judkins level of volume for any of these guys. Well, that's exactly what Lacy got. So Lacy should be 100% by week's end. All right, I got to take a real deep breath before we dive into these wide receivers. Like I said, there's a lot to cover today, and we're already almost an hour into this. Good Lord, my apologies to each and every one of you. But you guys appreciate the content regardless, so let us power on through. And so, if you guys recall back at the start of the waiver wire segment, I kind of discussed the wide receivers real quick and how there's a lot of intriguing guys, but almost every one of them you could kind of poke their hole. You could poke holes in their potential, right? In their idea of being a surefire bet. Like, you know, their target share is too low. They play on an offense that isn't going to score a lot. Their system doesn't normally support a CFF relevant wide receiver. Things like that. However, the first guy we are going to discuss here, Chase Hendricks, wide receiver out of Ohio, pretty much checks off every single one of my boxes. And I think he's the only one that really checks off all my boxes. And I think that makes him a must add in any format. He is rostered in 25% of leagues this past year. Had a really nice game against Rutgers this past weekend, a solid power four defense. let's dive on into it. With Tim Albin leaving for Charlotte and Brian Smith's promotion offensive coordinator to head coach, the assumption was that Ohio's offense was going to look very similar to years past. And based on what we saw Saturday versus Rutgers, we were pretty much correct to assume that. Like, one of the key pieces of that system, though, the last couple of years, has been a slot wide receiver that they force feed. The two names that kind of come to mind here over the last couple of years, Sam Wiggles and then Coleman Owen this past weekend. The talk during the offseason was that Chase Hendricks would be that next guy up for Ohio, but given the fact that he kind of played on the outside for most of his career, that kind of left enough doubt in drafters' minds that someone else could emerge there in the slot if Hendricks was going to be kept out there on the outside. That was enough to kind of make Hendricks slip in most drafts. Again, that's why his rostership's only 25%. But there's so much good news across the board here, right? Hendricks was not kept on the outside like previous seasons. He has been moved into that slot, which solidifies his CFF relevance not only as the most talented receiving option on this squad, but he's now in that system spot to benefit the most as well. Against the Scarlet Knights, Hendricks saw 12 throws head his way. He caught 9 of them for 115 yards. He didn't find the end zone, but, you know, given his usage, given how much this offense I expect to score going forward, that issue will be resolved sooner rather than later. Those 12 targets were a whopping 42.9% share of all his throws. Simply put, 42.9% shares of all the throws in this game on the Ohio side. Simply put, if Hendricks is going to be fed, Simply put, Hendricks is going to be fed. It's even better that Hendricks saw all the workload against a power four defense that has been solid in recent years. To me, that really just goes to show how much the staff plans to rely on him in their toughest matchups. When they need a play to win, when they need a guy to score, they're going to look Hendricks' way. The Bobcats may have come up short against Rutgers, but Hendricks' impact on the 25 season will be felt for a long time as the weeks roll on here. Like I said, Hendricks, a must add, and outside of a date with Ohio State in a couple of weeks, I think he could potentially end up being a weekly starter. Let's move on to our second guy, a guy that I have been banging the drum for all offseason, and boy, it feels good. It feels so good to see him actually pay off so quickly. We're going to discuss Malachi Toney, the wide receiver out of Miami of Florida, the true freshman phenom. Oh, the glories of week one, where we get to see the first glimmers of future stars of the sport in true freshmen. But in the case of Malachi Toney, we got a full starburst as he announced himself to the world on primetime Sunday night against Notre Dame by scoring the first touchdown in the game and then going on to have 10 targets, 6 receptions, and 82 yards in addition to that touchdown. There was the steadiest of drumbeats all offseason about a true freshman receiver stepping up to fill the massive holes here with the Hurricanes left by Jacoby George, Isaiah Horton, and most importantly, Xavier Restrepo. The praise was coming from everywhere. Beat reporters, coaches, Carson Beck himself. It was going to be a shocker if he didn't start at least contributing immediately for the Hurricanes. But not only will Toney contribute, he looks like he'll be the key in this Hurricane offense moving forward. He looked so good against Notre Dame. When you take a look at the system, Shane Dawson comes from the Dane Holgerson coaching tree and subsequently can and will produce top-end wide receivers for CFF when he has a guy that he can trust. Last 2 years, he has made Xavier Restrepo, a guy who, by the way, went on to be an undrafted free agent in the NFL, into a mainstay for college fantasy football, 120 targets each season. Toney looks to be taking over that slot role in this system, beating out many other would-be contenders like JoJo Trader, Keelan Marion, Toney Johnson. Not only is this the desirable play for this offense, it is also where Carson Beck has done his dirty work. Most of Carson Beck's greatest strengths is attacking zone coverages, particularly over the middle of the field, and that is where Toney is going to be living most of the season, so you can expect him for Beck to constantly be looking Toney's way, and we saw that this past week against Notre Dame. I have high expectations for Toney. I didn't expect him as a true freshman to be the leading receiver week one against a stout Notre Dame defense. And from there, Miami's schedule is only going to get easier from here. And if Toney was able to do that against a Fighting Irish defense. I can't wait to see what he does against the poorest defenses of the AAC, or of the ACC, excuse me. I think that Tony is a must-add this week. He should be well above 30% by the end of the week. Again, a lot of wide receivers to talk about this week, but I figured I'd go ahead and reiterate a guy that I'm surprised not more people took shots on after his week zero performance, but let's discuss Jaden Bradley, the wide receiver out of UNLV, currently rostered on 12% of leagues. I don't love the idea of betting on a Dan Mullen wide receiver to produce weekly production for CFF, but now we have 2 weeks in a row of Jaden Bradley producing, and it looks like, as the kids would say, it looks like this is going to be a thing. So far this season, Calandria hasn't passed for more than 25 times in either game he's been a part of. Granted, he hasn't been really required to do so by game script, but the point still stands, this is a relatively low volume passing game. That's what makes it so impressive that Bradley not only has just one, but 200-yard plus games to start the season. In each contest, Bradley has led the Rebels receivers in two key stats. One, targets, obviously, but two, average depth of target. His average depth of target through two games has been an incredible 16.9 yards down the field. So not only is he getting the most opportunities for his squad, but he's getting some high value opportunities. Like when he catches the ball, he is getting good chunk plays. There's really not much more you can ask of a wide receiver, even in a low passing volume. He's, you know, north of 25% of the passing volume, so that should be good enough for most weeks. And the good news is that UNLV is on its way to becoming this season's version of 2024 New Mexico, right? A good offense paired with an absolutely terrible defense that is going to force its best players to score and produce. I think once UNLV and Bradley get through this tough matchup here against UCLA in week two, it should be smooth sailing the rest of the season. I think they'll have a ton of great matchups with regards to Mountain West opponents. All right, continuing on here. Again, I had a ton of wide receivers I could discuss this week, so it only makes sense that as part of one of the five that I'm going to do a deep dive on here, Miles Davis, the running back out of Utah State, is one of them. And yes, you did not mishear me. I am discussing a running back here in the wide receiver section, but that is because Miles Davis has a potential to be one of this year's cheat codes. He has both running back and wide receiver eligibility because of his split role that he saw a little bit there at BYU. He's carrying it over here to Utah State, and boy, I don't necessarily blame it. He was kind of used as both in this game. He had 12 attempts on the ground for 88 yards and a touchdown, so obviously looked good there. He also had 6 targets for 6 receptions for 61 yards, led the team in targets. I had talked about during the offseason that Javon Jacobs might be a guy that inherits this kind of role, and I didn't necessarily anticipate that Miles Davis would be able to do that, but boy, I was wrong. I just straight up had the wrong guy here. Miles Davis being able to plug a starting running back for a team like Utah State, which I do anticipate to be able to score quite a bit this season. I mean, what else can I say? Like, this is a potential cheat code that you could plug in, especially if you're struggling at wide receiver, you're looking for guys that might be a little bit more consistent, safer floor. I think Davis is a must-add. They got a tough matchup here this upcoming week against Texas A&M, but after that, it's almost full Mountain West G5 as far as the eye can see. We saw this past week that Utah State's offense started off really hot, kind of fell apart a little bit in the second half. They're very much playing not to lose there. I think they've got some things to iron out. They'll be fine the rest of the season. And again, I trust a Bronco Mendenhall system to get his best players the ball as best as they, in any way, shape, or form, whether that's on the ground, whether that's receiving. Miles Davis seems to be a very important piece for the Aggies moving forward, and that makes him a great pickup at wide receiver. Last wide receiver we'll deep dive in on here is Bo Sparks, the wide receiver out of Texas State. I believe the number one scoring wide receiver from this past week, so you might be wondering why I'm waiting so long. Well, one, so much of what he did came off the fact that he scored 4 touchdowns. Very obviously, when your quarterback Brad Jackson throws 4 touchdowns and you score all 4 of them, that is not a sustainable thing at all. But, I still think that there's very much a CFF-relevant wide receiver, which is why I'm discussing him here, right? Sparks is playing for Texas State, which is a G.J. Kinney offense, which we do love, right? He has 7 targets, caught all 7 of them for 82 yards, and like I said, the 4 touchdowns. You might be sitting here saying, like, if you look at the target share, you're like, well, Bo Sparks wasn't even the leading target. That's fine. I don't need him to be the leading target. What I do like, though, is that he got 33.3% target share. Compare that to a lot of the guys behind him. Him and Chris Dawn seem to be the wide receivers that Brad Jackson is looking for. I would say that Chris Dawn, given this offensive system, is worth a waiver ad as well. The other thing with Bo Sparks is that he is playing in that slot position, which is where Joey Hobert has been the last couple of years. It is the spot that has typically seen the most consistent volume week to week. And so, like I said, with Brad Jackson, outside of a date with Arizona State in a couple of weeks, there's a lot of shootout potential week to week. And Bo Sparks, if this past week was any indication, when they're in the red zone, Brad Jackson will be looking for him. Again, obviously, I don't expect him to score 4 touchdowns in any single game the rest of the season, but it's very clear that is who Jackson is looking for when they need scoring opportunities. So I think Bo Sparks is absolutely worth a pickup here. All right, now we got a rapid fire through quite a few honorable mentions at wide receiver here. The first one I'll actually mention is a guy that isn't on the graphic. It's a guy that added late, or not added late, a guy I took out late because I wanted to add in Malachi Coney, so one guy had to come out. But Keontez Lewis, wide receiver out of Oklahoma, obviously, you know, Deion Burks looks great, but Keontez Lewis looked really good for Oklahoma as well. Play on the outside there. Had 11 targets in his game, 9 receptions, 119 yards, 2 touchdowns, almost 30% of the target share. And if you go and look at the wide receiver snaps for Oklahoma, they did not rotate guys. Their 3 main guys, it appears, are going to be Deion Burks, Keontez Lewis, and Isaiah Cetania. Maybe that changes down the stretch, but I find it very odd they didn't rotate guys hardly at all against an FCS opponent. It really seems like they were taking yesterday to take a lot of time to build up chemistry in a real game setting between Mateer and what appears to be his top 3 receivers. If that is going to be the case, Lewis could be a huge pickup early on in the season here. Very much fills the role that Mateer is used to with Kyle Williams last year. I think he's absolutely worth a pickup. I don't know if he sees 11 targets in a game again this year, but regardless, you got to take the chance there. Lewis Bond at Boston College, you know, 12 targets, 138 yards against FCS opponents, 31.6% target share. I think he's worth a pickup. Mario Craver, wide receiver at Texas A&M, rostered on 23% of rosters here. 10 targets, 8 receptions, 122 yards, 2 touchdowns. You know, 25%+ target share. I don't typically love this system for wide receiver production, but it very much feels like that A&M brought in Craver, brought in Concepcion to be guys that they are going to funnel targets to. And so Craver being the guy that is getting those higher value targets, those further down the field targets, I think he'll have a bit more consistent production week to week. Romello Brinson, wide receiver out of SMU, rostered 1% of leagues. This one intrigues me quite a lot. He had 8 targets, 7 receptions, 121 yards, and a touchdown. More than 30% target share in this game against a FCS opponent here. It's been a while since we've had a Rhett Lashley true wide receiver one, and with Jordan Hudson going down, and the word is that it potentially might be season ending for Jordan Hudson, Brinson stepped up in a big way to be the wide receiver one for SMU this past weekend. Again, it could very well be that this is a fluke and it could change here in a couple of weeks, but if I'm in a deeper league, I would absolutely take the shot on Romello Brinson. Cameron Ross out of Virginia, Ross on 2% of leagues. I like Trell Harris here, but he was injured right before the start of the season. He did play and he, you know, performed well. I think he had like 93 yards total, but it was on way less targets versus Cameron Ross, 9 targets, 7 receptions, 124 yards, and a touchdown. Again, in a deeper league, I'm absolutely taking the shot on Ross there. Jaden Barnes, wide receiver out of Appalachian State. This is a guy that I got a lot of DMs and questions about, asking if he would make it onto my waiver show today. Technically, yes. He is here as an honorable mention, but, you know, he had 8 targets, 134 yards this past weekend, and a touchdown. Looks good. The offense threw a ton of passes. It was like 46 passes for A.J. Swan. But the thing is, at the end of the day, he only had a 17.0% target share. And I'm not exactly sure what to anticipate with App State moving forward. It's part of the reason why I kept AJ Swan on the honorable mentions rather than making him an official play. Because I don't know if I trust App State's going to actually run that many plays going forward. And if those things do scale down, right, like rather than throwing 46 passes, we're getting down to, you know, 30, 35 passes a game, suddenly Jaden Barnes doesn't look so good, because in that scenario, you're looking at him rather than getting 8-9 targets a game, suddenly you're down to, you know, 5-6 targets a game, and that can get pretty dicey pretty quickly. Granted, Barnes was by far the most efficient wide receiver among the App State wide receivers this past week, so I think he'll continue to get some of those high-value targets. Again, definitely worth an add, especially in deeper leagues. We'll continue on with some more honorable mentions here. The two UAB wide receivers, Corey Milliner and Iverson Hooks, they seem like they're going to be the main guys for this Blazers offense, both of which got over 25% target share this weekend. Milliner looked great, 5 receptions, 98 yards, and a touchdown. Very much continues to be their deep threat, high-value targets all over the place with him. Iverson Hooks seems to be more their volume play, 9 targets, 7 receptions, 73 yards, and a touchdown. Once again, I think both are worth adding. Milliner probably better in standard leagues. Hooks, you're probably looking at more in a PPR format. Jaquan Gibson, the wide receiver out of UMass, came out of nowhere this past week. 16 targets, 12 receptions, 132 yards, 0 touchdowns. 44.4% target share here. I don't know if that's sustainable moving forward, but regardless, it's very clear that this UMass offense will try to run through him quite a bit. The main problem with him and the next guy we're going to discuss here is I don't know how many scoring opportunities we're going to see with them. So maybe you grab Gibson in a PPR format, because again, like, you know, that's still 25 points if, you know, with 12 receptions, 132 yards there. Chris Durr, the wide receiver out of Wyoming, I know some people are pretty high on this now. He looked great this past weekend. 9 targets, 7 receptions, 146 yards, and a touchdown. 26.5% target share. My only thing is, we are talking Wyoming's offense here. They don't typically produce top-end wide receivers, and part of me wonders how much this was him benefiting from the fact that Akron's defensive game plan seemed to be throw 3 or 4 guys defending John Michael Gillenborg, and that freed up Durr to do a whole lot of things. That was a piece of this offense that Akron didn't see coming. I question that this is sustainable week to week just because of Wyoming's offense, but regardless, if you're just looking for big end guys to go after, I think Durr is a guy that, you know, in a deeper league, I'm okay for. Last guy on this page is Omega Blake, wide receiver out of Arkansas. Again, a guy that looked really good this past weekend. 8 targets, 7 receptions, 121 yards, and a touchdown. 22.9% target share, a little lower than I would want to see. But regardless, Arkansas is missing a big outside wide receiver threat like Andrew Armstrong in a big way. And it does appear that Omega Blake is going to be that guy for Arkansas. So I would be happy to take the shot on him. And hopefully he can get to that that target stat line that Andrew Armstrong was seeing last year. He is, as it currently stands, on his way to about 95 targets. So I'm totally, totally cool with that. Last 5 wide receiver honorable mentions. Again, like I said, we got 15 wide receivers here that I'm discussing just as honorable mentions. Like I said, if you're struggling at wide receiver, guess what? There's so many good options out here right now. One big one is Skylar Bell, the wide receiver out of UConn. 5 targets, 4 receptions, 135 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Low target share in this game, 13.2%. But I think this staff knows that Bell's their best player on offense, right? He did his thing. They got him out. I think he scored the first 2 touchdowns for UConn here. Like, he did his thing. They got him out of there. They're going to rely on him down the stretch. I think that Bell is absolutely a guy that is in for a huge, huge season here with UConn, as long as that quarterback situation continues to be stable and they're not having to rotate guys because of injury or, you know, guys not performing well, stuff like that. Keyshawn Singleton out of USF, 5 targets, 5 receptions, 93 yards, and a touchdown. Only 20% target share, again, a little lower than I would really want to see. But you gotta understand in the context of the game. USF ended up blowing out Boise State, and Singleton's workload almost all came in the first half. I think if we see USF in a more tight game, we absolutely could see Singleton get upwards of, you know, 10 or 8 to 10 targets easily in a game, as well as them getting some rushing work on the ground as well. I think he's absolutely worth a pickup. He's rostered in 20% of leagues. That'll probably be north of 30% by the end of the week. Another guy to keep an eye out for here is Carl Chester, wide receiver out of Southern Miss, rostered on 2% of leagues. This past week against Mississippi State, 10 targets, 6 receptions, 53 yards, and 0 touchdowns. You might be saying to me, Jared, that's not a good stat line. Yeah, I mean, he played against Mississippi State, but we know this is a Blake Anderson offense. We know for a fact that he is going to have a top-end wide receiver. Guess what? We got one here, at least in terms of volume, with Carl Chester. Again, 10 targets against an SEC defense. One, tells you how much confidence they have in him. Two, easily the highest target share amongst all of these Southern Miss wide receivers with 26.3% target share. I'm excited to see what he's able to do this weekend against a lower level competition here. I think that he could be in for a big week. It's part of the reason why I took him on CFF List's waiver wire draft show this week, which, by the way, I forgot to mention that at the start of the show. My apologies to J-Mill and Willie B there. I was on their show this past weekend, and as much as all of the players that I'm talking about here today are to help you down the line, their show is more geared towards guys that can help you this upcoming week. It is a different way to look at the waiver wire, and quite frankly, it is a reason why, or like Carl Chester's a perfect example of how it's different. Carl Chester's a guy here I'm mentioning as a honorable mention down the line. I do like his matchup a lot this week, so even though, you know, he's quote-unquote ranked so much lower in terms of my show here today, I actually ended up taking him in that because I think he could absolutely blow up this week against lower level competition. We'll see. Anyway, Harrison Wallace, wide receiver out of Ole Miss. You know, we talked about Dejon Stripling, but Wallace looked really, really good as one of the top outside options for Ole Miss this week. 8 targets, 5 receptions, 130 yards, and a touchdown. 23.5% target share, a little lower than I want, but regardless, definitely something to keep an eye on. If he's available in a deep league, yeah, go ahead and grab him. And the last guy I will throw out here is Cameron Dorner, the wide receiver out of North Texas at 1%. He had 6 targets, 6 receptions, 100 yards, and a touchdown, only 18.2% target share. I'm still recommending him, even though, again, the target numbers seem low, target share seems kind of low, for a couple of reasons. One, Landon Sides, God bless his soul, he seems like he is injured once again, and there's no real timeline as to when he is going to be available for the Mean Green. So in his place, Cameron Dorner is now that outside option for North Texas. I have said over and over again that the place to look in a North Texas offense is that outside wide receiver, and Dorner showed it once again. Again, 6 receptions, 100 yards, and a touchdown. Led the team in targets, led the team in production. I think that he's worth a pickup right now, just to see where things kind of go. And you might be saying, well, I don't like a guy that's only got 6 targets. This was against Lamar. North Texas destroyed them, and there was no real reason to keep their starters out there too long. Even with them splitting everything up more, Dorner still led them on the day in targets. I think we'll see an uptick in targets when, you know, North Texas actually has a competitive game that they need to face, which will be sooner rather than later. So, all right, let's see. Tight ends. Almost forgot about the tight ends. Let's discuss these guys here real quick. But again, great options at tight end this week, as there normally is in week one. Some guys emerge here. We'll start with Michael Trigg, the tight end out of Baylor. Yes, yes, yes. What's the saying? Never wrong, just early. That's exactly what's happened here with Michael Trigg. He looks pretty solid as one of the leading receiving options for Baylor. He had himself a really nice week this past week. 16 targets, 7 catches, 90-something yards, and a touchdown. Helped out Baylor as much as he could. I'm a little hesitant because, again, part of what made Trigg so successful here was the fact that Josh Cameron got completely shut down by Auburn's defense, and that kind of forced Sawyer Robertson to look elsewhere, and obviously he went Trigg's way a lot. I don't know if that continues as much down the line if other defenses take away Josh Cameron as well as they did, But regardless, even if Trigg's volume gets cut in half to only about 8 targets, we should still see a lot of really good weeks out of Trigg. I think he'll end up being easily a top 20 tight end by the end of the year. But another guy that is somebody that I am very much looking forward to is Jackson Warren, the tight end out of Colorado State. Michael Trigg might be one of my favorite individual players at tight end the last couple of years, and I've been waiting on him to explode. But if you're talking about just a pure system play, Jackson Warren is that dude that I think could end up being a top three tight end by the end of the year. There are two types of ways to really become CFF relevant at the tight end position. Either you're a piece of a really good offense that scores a ton, and you're, you know, a 2-3 option on that offense, or you can be like Jackson Warren here, where you are the best option on your offense, and even if your offense doesn't score a lot, you just by having a ton of volume can outscore most tight ends at other places. And so I think that's the path we're headed on here. Like, Warren looked great this past weekend against Washington, 11 targets, 6 receptions, 79 yards, and a touchdown. If this staff trusts Warren that much against a Big Ten opponent, I fully anticipate that he will be a key piece for Colorado State as they move into Mountain West play. And like I said, very much could end up a top three tight end by the end of the year. Another guy that caught my eye this past weekend was Dorian Thomas, the tight end out of New Mexico, rostered on 1% of leagues, very much available everywhere. 14 targets, 10 receptions, 71 yards, and 2 touchdowns against Michigan. Obviously very impressive he was able to do that against Michigan's defense. But even more so, again, this is an offense we didn't really know a ton about. We kind of knew about Keegan Johnson. He got plenty of targets in this game, but there wasn't really a ton to know about what was going to happen beyond him. And that question seems to be answered with Dorian Thomas, who actually led the team in targets for this game. Do I anticipate he gets that every single week? Probably not, but again, very much worth an add for any team that needs a tight end. And then some honorable mentions at tight end. Marlon Klein at Michigan looks like he is inheriting at least a good chunk of the workload that Colson Loveland got last year. Sadu Traore out of Mississippi State, rostered 19% of leagues. He looks like he is set to once again do what he did last year, which is still going to end up being a really good TFF tight end option. Just hopefully he can end up with some more touchdowns to actually push him into the upper tier of tight ends. And then you got a couple of smaller guys that kind of blew up a little bit this week, at least in terms of target share. Jaron Canuck out of Oklahoma was kind of a surprise. I think he was a former linebacker that they've converted to tight end. He looked pretty solid this weekend. Jameson Gears out of Minnesota was very much a safety blanket for Drake Lindsey. And then Desirio Ryles got 8 targets in Eastern Carolina. That is an offense that is not afraid to use tight ends. And so I think he might end up being a decently solid pick at tight end moving forward. All right, almost done, y'all. Almost done. Let's finish up here with some DST streaming options for this week. And this is basically me picking on, you know, some G5 opponents going up against some Power 4 opponents here. We'll start in Nebraska, 19% rostered already for their DST, but they got Akron this week. They were able to shut down Cincinnati for a good chunk yesterday outside of a dual threat quarterback. Even if Akron had a dual threat quarterback, I don't think that it would be really that much trouble for this Nebraska defense. So I trust Nebraska this week. South Carolina, they got an FCS opponent. They got South Carolina State. Given the fact that they were able to shut down Virginia Tech last week, I think that they'll be solid for that matchup. Utah looks great this year. They've got an FCS opponent this year. I anticipate a potential shutout there. LSU, not a team I typically rely on for DSCs in the past because their defense, even though they're talented, haven't really lived up to it. They looked really, really good against Clemson. Oh my God, I completely blanked on it. This past week, they got LA Tech this week, and LA Tech is an offense that still has a lot to figure out. I think LSU will shut them down pretty well. And then UCF, they've got an FCS opponent this week. They were able to hold Jacksonville State to 10 points last week. I think that they'll be able to do so once again this week. All right, that's it, y'all. I really appreciate it. Again, like I said, not in midseason form yet. Definitely still trying to get back into the swing of things here, but really do hope I hope you appreciate the show, and I appreciate you guys for listening. But for now, we've come to the end of our show. Again, make sure you have, if not already, leave a like, a comment, subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, if you're on a podcast, follow the show, leave a 5-star review. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus of Canton podcast shows for shows ranging on pretty much anything you could think of related to the college fantasy game. I'll see you guys tomorrow night live on the Chasing Daddy YouTube channel, where I will be answering your start sick questions, and we will also be preparing for week 2. Until then, really, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.